VCY America presents Crosstalk, a nationwide call-in program discussing issues that have an effect on our families, our communities, our churches, our nation, and our world. Crosstalk, an opportunity for you to voice your concerns for biblical principles. And now live by satellite and around the world on the Internet at vcyamerica.org. Here is today's Crosstalk.
And thank you for joining us today here on Crosstalk. Ladies and gentlemen, Cuba. Cuba is a modern-day example of why we should not go down this path called socialism. I mean, just 100 years ago, Cuba was a prosperous nation. Look how this country has been destroyed. Mass protests are taking place, and folks, it's not because of global climate change. It's not because of the vaccination and other issues that you hear about in so much of the news. But we have Cubans that are seeking liberty, liberty and freedom. They're making efforts even to come to the United States. In light of this, WND.com reveals that the founder of the controversial 1619 Project, Nicole Hannah Jones, who contends that America is inherently racist, said of the totalitarian government of Cuba that it is the most multiracial and equal, the most equal multiracial country in the Western Hemisphere, and said socialism is the reason for its success. Just look how so many are trying to escape from this regime, seeking freedom. And yet here in the U.S., there's a plan to take us down this route of socialism. Well, joining us here today with a warning is William Federer. Bill is a nationally known speaker, historian, author, and president of Amerisearch. He's a speaker on the American Minute broadcast. He's authored many books like America's God and Country, Encyclopedia Quotations, Who is the King in America, and Socialism, the Real History from Plato to the Present, in which he analyzes how the deep state capitalizes on crises to consolidate control. Bill, welcome back here to Crosstalk.
Jim, great to be with you.
Bill, this whole matter of Cuba, I mean, you actually wrote about Cuba in your book, Section 71 of your book. You told all about Cuba. It was once a pretty prosperous place.
Right. It was a Spanish possession from the time of Christopher Columbus. And then when we had gotten rid of slavery in America, they kept slavery going on in Cuba. And so we came to their rescue with the Spanish-American War, and the people of Cuba became free. But then we began to see politics, and we had went from a very prosperous to communist. First, it went from prosperous to corrupt with Juan Bautista, and Fidel Castro went around even to Harvard University pre-revolution, and he said how he's going to bring change, hope and change. That was literally Castro's motto, hope and change.
Wow.
The same one that Obama used. And he was gathering support against this corrupt Bautista. Rafael Cruz, the father of Ted Cruz, he's a friend of mine, he grew up, and he said how Castro was organizing all these young people to get rid of this corrupt Bautista. And then Castro would say, watch out for communists. We hear that the communists are infiltrating our group. And Rafael said, that dirty dog, he was the one that was communist. He was doing the psychological projection where you look everywhere else except at the person that's the one guilty.
Mm-hmm.
But Castro took over Cuba and instituted a totalitarian government. By the time he died, he was worth like hundreds of millions of dollars, where the average person in Cuba, you know, may just a couple thousand dollars a year, is a total concentration of wealth, concentration of power into the hands of these elites. And when you look at any time there's a dictator, a king, it's a pyramid structure to society. You have the Pharaoh Caesar dictator on top. You have the deep state ruling class that enforces the will of the dictator. And then everyone else is equal because everyone else has nothing. And that goes all the way back to Plato, where he says that the people are the abdomen of iron and bronze, and all of the property is held communally, but it's the deep state. It's the saying, whoever controls the purse strings has the power. So, okay, everybody owns everything equally. It's in a big pot, but who gets to dole it out? And that's usually the dictator. So what we're seeing in Cuba is the people saying, we've had enough. We want freedom.
Yeah.
And America needs to put pressure on our leaders. I'm in Washington, D.C. right now. My Uber driver yesterday is from Nigeria. And he said the Boko Haram Muslims from the north are still going to the south every single day, killing people on buses and killing entire villages and kidnapping hundreds of kids. The U.S. is saying nothing. We're doing nothing. The same thing that, you know, Black Lives Matter. But what about those Black Lives? Evidently, they don't matter to the Black Lives Matter people in America. They're only interested in division. Same thing with Cuba. We have this terrible situation of injustice. There's systemic injustice. We need a group that wants to fight systemic injustice in Cuba. Evidently, the left is silent on this, and I thank God for you speaking it out and bringing attention to this.
You know, Bill, what's interesting is while these protests are happening in Cuba and people calling for their freedom, I saw in the New American, they were writing that Black Lives Matter, whom you just mentioned, they're blaming the United States. They're blaming the embargoes of the U.S. We are the reason for the woes in Cuba.
Right, so they're doing, again, the typical tactic of psychological projection or blame shifting where the attacker blames the victim. Even Karl Marx is credited with saying, accuse others of what you do. So they're the ones that are racist, they're the ones that are intolerant, and they're calling the innocent people that. It's a deflection, it's a distraction, it's no different than a fake in basketball. You act like you're going to go one way, you go the other. They make people look one way when they're the actual guilty ones on the other. David Axelrod was President Obama's campaign manager. And on NPR Radio, 2014, David Axelrod said, in Chicago politics, we have a tradition where you throw a brick through your own campaign office window and then call a press conference to accuse your opponent. In other words, you do the criminal thing, but you blame your opponent for doing the criminal thing. And so here, Castro, the leftists, the communists have been oppressing people. They want to blame the innocent. America on the problem. Mm-hmm. No, it's a systemic problem, and it's that people have no rights, no freedoms, no possessions, and we need to put pressure on our politicians to stand up for the common people in Cuba.
Bill, does it seem odd to you that President Biden, who has opened the floodgates at our border with Mexico, and he's lifting sanctions on the export of gas now to socialist Venezuela, but he is threatening Cubans bound for the United States, saying, no, don't come here. We're going to turn you over to third-party nations. And then that we have voters here in the U.S. that want to put this flotilla together to take a medicine and food and water and give some relief supplies. But they are being threatened with fines and arrests from the United States, saying, no, you've got to get permission from the Coast Guard first before you would go and do this. It seems, I don't know, it seems odd to me that we're opening floodgates at one end, one border, and yet here in this case in which we know oppression is indeed taking place, that we're very close-minded.
Right. The hypocrisy is obvious. And what we see is it very bluntly, America experienced a coup with the left, and we have now people in the highest office that are pushing the communist agenda. Here we are backing away. What about Hong Kong? All these freedom people in the streets in Hong Kong, right as we speak, they're going house to house with a long list and arresting them, transporting them over to mainland China, and they're being locked away, never to be heard from again. Where's the U.S.? Why aren't we standing up for these freedom-loving people? The government in the United States has sided with Iran. Here, the Iranians have been funding the radical Muslims in the Middle East that have been attacking Israel and so forth. And so we've experienced a coup, and the common people are being distracted with day-to-day things. And we're letting the foreign policy of this powerful, the most powerful nation in the world, we're letting our foreign policy be co-opted.
Bill, what lessons should we draw from Cuba as we have so many right now in our Congress? I think of the Squad as well as others. I mean, there's progressive activist groups as well that are trying to propel this nation to go the way of Cuba. What lessons should we be drawing, and what warning is there to not adopt a socialistic mindset that is so predominant upon us right now?
Yeah, every single country, socialism, Lenin said socialism is a transition phase to communism. Karl Marx said communism can be summed up in one sentence, abolition of private property. And then you look at Karl Marx, he was at the University of Berlin, and his professor was Hegel, H-E-G-E-L. And Hegel came up with this idea of dialectics, where you take one corner of a triangle, then it's called a thesis. The opposite corner is an antithesis, and the top corner is a synthesis. And so Karl Marx says, okay, the thesis is the status quo in the country. The antithesis is a crisis, is discord, is all kinds of internal domestic violence. And when it gets bad enough, everybody settles for the synthesis, where the government usurps power, promising to fix it. So socialism it's a marketing tactic. You create the need and fill it. You create a problem that's real bad, and everybody settles for your answer that's half as bad. And so we see it's a sales campaign for dictatorship. Socialism is a sales campaign for dictatorship. It's a cultural bait and switch. It promises everybody's going to be taken care of. Everybody's going to have health care. Everybody's going to be, on free checks in the mail. Yes, but the quote from Gerald Ford stands out like a red light. Gerald Ford said 100 times, and I read all of his speeches, the government that's big enough to give you everything you want is big enough to take away everything you have.
Wow.
So we want the government to provide everything? It will, but it'll be in control. And then kicks in the other saying, whoever controls the purse strings has the power. Whoever is in the government position to dole out everything, they like their job. They want to keep their job. And they will be tempted to funnel more of the goods toward those that support them. And if somebody wants to overthrow them, they will be discretionary and hold off the goods and even use the power of the state to go after those people, prosecute them and falsely accuse them and lock them away. And so so socialism is a bait and switch culturally. It promises heaven, delivers hell.
Yeah,
and it's appeared many times throughout history.
So, Bill, are you saying that the chaos that we have in our nation right now, all the upheaval that's taking place, as well as the government dole outs and control, et cetera, are you saying all of this is intentional?
Yes. And it's called the Cold War tactics that the KGB did after World War II. And, I just got done reading George Marshall. He was the, after World War II, he's the one that came up with the Marshall Plan. So he goes over to France, and he sees people struggling, and he sees the socialists coming into France, and the socialists are saying, let's go the communist route. Let's go giving the government charge of everything, because we just got through the war, and we're all struggling. And Marshall said, unless we funnel money and kickstart the French economy and get it going again and the German economy, they will go in the socialist direction. They will be satellite to the Soviet Union. And so America put a whole lot of money over there to get all their businesses going. But there's countries that we didn't do that. And in their struggles, they did turn toward the Soviet Union, and that's called behind the Iron Curtain. Albania, Romania, Hungary, Poland, Lithuania, and they all had these critical theory done where they had their crisis, and then the dictators usurped power.
Folks, we're going to come back with this, as well as we're going to be taking a look at the importance in this goal of manipulating public opinion, how that manipulation gets underway to change our mind on these very aspects. Bill Federer with us back in a minute. You're listening to Crosstalk.
Back to Genesis with Dr. John Morris, scientist and creation researcher with the Institute for Creation Research. Dr. Morris, is any progress being made in cloning attempts?
Chris, there is a lot of work in cloning going on these days, but all is not so rosy in clone land. Often when clones are born, they exhibit diseases which normally are restricted to older specimens. For instance, Dolly the sheep, the first mammal cloned, died of old age about the same time as her mother died of old age. Recently, 4 cloned pigs all died of old age-related diseases within 6 months of being born. This should make us stop and think before cloning humans. Are we going to have elderly babies? It's not really known yet. There are a lot of good reasons not to go ahead with human cloning. This is just one of them. It's best to go back to Genesis and recognize that humans are created in the image of God and therefore deserve protection.
Visit our website at www.icr.org.
William J. Federer, our guest here on Crosstalk, Socialism, Lessons from Cuba. And folks, we're going to be looking at some of this transition that's going on. And Bill, just before the break, we were talking about this chaos that we see presently in our society here today. You're saying this is intentional. It's taking us down this road called socialism. The ultimate goal is it communism?
Yeah, so socialism is a transition phase to communism. That's what Lenin said. And so one of the books I wrote, I went through every century of recorded human history and documented that the most common form of government is a king. Nimrod, Pharaoh, Caesar, Kaiser, Sultan, Tsar. And as the centuries go on, the kingdoms get bigger with military advancements, with gunpowder and, you know, scimitar swords and so forth. So that's the norm, power concentrated. It's very rare to have people rule themselves without a king. We call those democracies and republics. They're called popular governments because the population is ruling themselves. But let's say that there is a democracy or a republic where the people are in charge and you want to be a dictator. How do you talk the people into giving up their freedoms? Two ways, fear and free stuff. If you can get them into fear, they panic and they will trade freedom for security. And then the other way is a little bit slower, but it's called dependency, and they will trade their freedom for dependency. And these tactics have been used over and over. It's like a drug dealer can take over a neighborhood two ways. He can come in and shoot people, get everybody in fear, they panic, and they agree to submit to the mob and pay extortion protection money. Or drug dealer can come in and give away free drugs and get everybody hooked. And then once they're hooked, he says, do you want some more? You got to do something. You got to sell yourself into prostitution. You've got to steal from your neighbor. You got to do this, that, and the other if you want some more. And so the way that socialism can take over a country is they can have fear, some incident or something that causes fear, and in the fear, people surrender their freedom for security. And then the other is you get people to get dependent on the government, get them free checks, they get used to the free checks, and then you say, you want some more free checks? You've got to do this, that, and the other. So it is interesting that it's actually in the Bible. In the Bible, yeah, imagine being in heaven and someone sows discord in heaven. His name's Lucifer. He got a third of the angels to rebel against God himself. So this plan of discord we see manifested in the Bible with Abimelech. And the situation is Gideon just defeated 100,000 Midianites. Israel is free from any crises. And Abimelech goes to the town of Shechem. And he does race politics, identity politics. He says, why should the sons of Gideon reign over you? I am your flesh and your bone. And the people say, we got to vote for Abimelech because he is our brother. And so they go to the temple of Baal-berith and they take 70 pieces of silver where Abimelech hired Antifa rioters, vain and worthless persons to do violence and to go to the house of Ophrah and kill all the sons of Gideon. And then Abimelech made himself king. And so this is used over and over again. Caesar did the same thing. Caesar's in Rome. He robs the Temple of Saturn. Instead of the Temple of Baal-berith, it's the Temple of Saturn. And he hires vain and worthless persons to support him against Pompey, and he wins, and then Caesar made himself dictator. But it appears over and over again, and I'll fast forward. This is how the British took over India. In 1714, Britain had a trading post that turned into a trading fort that turned into getting involved in local politics, and the British would give guns to one side, guns to the other side, and then do this critical theory where they would get them to fight each other, and when blood was shed, the people panicked, the British would come in this fearful condition and restore order, but in the process take away all their freedoms. And they did this again and again and again till Britain took over all of India, a quarter of the world's population. The British tried doing that in America by going to the American Indians and stirring them up. And it's listed in our Declaration of Independence. The British has excited insurrection with the savage on the frontier. French and Indian War. Pensacola, Florida is controlled by the British. They give guns and money to the Red Stick Creek Indians. The French pronunciation of red stick is Baton Rouge, right? And the Indians go and capture Fort Mims, Alabama, and instead of just capturing the people, they take them out and scalp all 500 of them. Why? Because the British promised them money for scalps. And so this is this tactic that they come in, They find people that have grievances, legitimate or not, but they stir them up. And the British, they're not wanting to help the Indians. No, they're using the Indians to sow this division because they want to take over the entire country. And so we see this is how Karl Marx did this critical theory in Germany and in Europe. And what's critical theory? That's where you observe the cultural groups, and whether it's a proletariat versus bourgeois, which is the working class against the business owners, whether it's the blacks against the whites, the Muslims against the Christians, the Catholics against the Protestants, the Hutus against the Tutsis in the Congo and Rwanda. You break the country into these groups, and you call them victims and oppressors, haves and have-nots. You then orchestrate protests and riots that destabilize the country, and in the panic, you usurp power, promising to fix it, but all you're doing is setting up a dictatorship.
It sounds like you're writing today's newspaper, Bill, because that's exactly what we've experienced over these past many months.
These tactics have been perfected. World War II ended, and you have these. By the way, all this information is in the book "Socialism: The Real History from Plato to the Present."
Mm-hmm.
Subtitle is "How the Deep State Capitalizes on Crises to Consolidate Control." And that's why I'm excited to get this book into people's hands. But
let me just interject here. We have this available through Crosstalk, our way of saying thank you for your support of $18 or more, and that includes shipping to you. We're sending you the book, Socialism, The Real History from Plato to the Present, How the Deep State Capitalizes on Crises to Consolidate Control. The things that we're seeing here today, folks, it is all part of the plan. And it's been, as Bill is saying here, it's been perfected. It has been going over and over, but you can see how it is laid out. Even the communist goals are laid out in this. Even before the election, we did several programs on this topic of socialism, its impact on how the education system is utilized to advance socialism. The communist goals, we did a program on it. We did a program even on vote fraud, folks, all part of the socialistic plan as well. It's all in here. Socialism, again, our way of saying thank you for your support of $18 or more. It is available online at vcyamerica.org, vcyamerica.org, or you may call our switchboard at 1-800-729-9829. That's 1-800-729-9829. Ask for a copy of the book Socialism. Bill, it's a real eye-opener. I see it to be one of the most important books that you have written.
You know, this past week I was in Dallas at the National Association of Christian Legislators. So a gentleman, state rep in Arkansas named Jason Rappert, put this together. They now have 150 in all states except Rhode Island. They're still working on somebody. But these are the state reps on the front lines pushing back against critical theory and transgenderism and standing for election integrity. And I'm at the table, and I got my books. One of the state reps buys 5 copies of the book, Socialism, the Real History from Plato to the Present, and says, I've got to get these into the hands of the other legislatures, because this is exactly what's happening.
Go ahead.
I don't know how much time for the break, but I've shared it before, but I think it's important to point out. Germany, after World War I, became a republic called the Weimar Republic. The people were in charge of their fate, and someone started a political party that took advantage of the struggles financially that the people were going through. The person's name is Adolf Hitler. The party's named is National Socialist Workers' Party, and he did the same thing. Instead of hiring vain and worthless persons like Abimelech did with money, or the way Caesar took money from the Temple of Saturn to hire supporters, Hitler had a violent group called the Brown Shirts, and they were nicknamed Sturmabteilung, which means stormtroopers. And they would storm into the meetings of Hitler's opponents and shout down the speakers and disrupt the meeting and leave it in chaos. And then they would do violence, and then they would lock arms and block access to buildings and block streets. There's literally pictures of them locking arms and blocking the public. Could you imagine people locking arms and blocking things? And then they went into the cities, and they smashed the windows and looted and set on fire over 7,500 stores. It's called the Night of Broken Glass, Kristallnacht. And then their capital got attacked. And it got set on fire, the Reichstag. And evidence points to Hitler's brown shirts being behind it. And in the confusion, Hitler blames his political opponents and has them hunted down and has them arrested and has them ramrodded through trials and has them shot. And when the dust settles, Hitler didn't have any political opponents, and he transitioned Germany from a republic to a dictatorship. So here he had the vain and worthless persons. He, like Caesar, hired these people to do the violence that he would promise to fix the violence. And this was perfected after World War II during the Cold War. And so Germany, France, England gave independence to their former colonies. They set up brand new countries with brand new leaders. It looked hopeful, except the Soviet Union came in and did critical theory, where they would break the country into groups, catalog them ethnically, Bosnians, Croats, Serbs, economically, racially, religiously, Sunni, Shia, Orthodox. It did not matter. And they would call them victims and oppressors, haves and have-nots, and they would organize protests that they would escalate into riots and violence and bloodshed. Why bloodshed? Because as soon as you had your friend killed, you no longer think rationally. It's us against them, and then people can be easily manipulated. It's called fear-mongering and race-baiting. In other words, you can sit down all day long and show them facts and evidence, but if their friend got killed, they're not going to listen to evidence. Mm-hmm. And so once there's bloodshed, then you co-opt the media to blame the new leader of the new country for all the problems. And you nurture weak links in the military. And when the country gets panicky and confused enough, in the fear, they will trade freedom for security. And someone comes along promising to fix it, and it's a Soviet puppet. And they do a coup or a rigged election, and the violence suddenly disappears for a while. And everybody sighs relief until they realize they just gave up the farm. And everything's now concentrated into the hands of a Soviet puppet dictator. And I may have shared these before, but I don't know how many in the audience heard them or not. But these tactics have been perfected, and this is called the Cold War. The U.S. has a president named Truman. He does nothing and lets these countries fall. And because he thinks the United Nations that he helped form will bring world peace. But the next president is Eisenhower. And he can sit there and let more countries fall, or he can fight fire with fire. And so he does. 1953, Iran sides with the Soviet Union, and you think, well, big deal. Well, wait a second. England had no oil fields. And so in 1908, Britain formed the Anglo-Iranian Oil Company. You know it better as BP. And so when Iran takes control of the Anglo-Iranian Oil Company, BP, Britain has an oil shortage. And they appeal to Eisenhower for help. And Eisenhower approves the first CIA operation to overthrow a country's leader. It's Operation Ajax. The Secretary of State, John Foster Dulles, CIA Director Allen Dulles, he sends over Kermit Roosevelt Jr., the grandson of Teddy Roosevelt, and he orchestrates riots. And they eventually throw out Mossadegh, the Iranian leader, and put in the Shah.
We got to take a break here, Bill. Bill Fitterer with us here today. Folks, lessons from Cuba. I mean, we see the impacts of socialism that led toward communism. And, folks, the same tactics are underway in the United States of America. Back in a minute. You're listening to Crosstalk.
Year after year, generation after generation, we as Americans enjoy the right and opportunity to let our voices be heard through the election of our governing officials. With over 200 years of peaceful transition from one elected body to another, the stability of America's republic stands alone among nations. Our founders pledged their life, their fortune, and their sacred honor in the establishment of this nation. Our country's founding documents have guided this nation and are the substance by which today's laws are judged. Do you own a copy of the Constitution? Documents of Freedom is a pocket-sized booklet containing the Constitution, the Bill of Rights, and all other amendments passed. The booklet also features the Declaration of Independence and Washington's Farewell. Documents of Freedom is available for a donation of $5 or more to VCY America and can be made by calling 1-800-729-9829. That's 1-800-729-9829. We'll be right back.
William J. Fitter, our guest here today on Crosstalk, author of Socialism, has subtitled How the Deep State Capitalizes on Crises to Consolidate Control. Again, friends, we make this book available through Crosstalk, our way of saying thank you for your support of $18 or more. Available at vcyamerica.org, vcyamerica.org. You'll see it right there on the scroll at the top of the page. Or you may call our switchboard today at 1-800-729-9829. That's 1-800-729-9829. Bill, as you were describing some of these issues, these tactics and so forth, I couldn't help but think about January 6, 2021. I mean, we continue to this day be told about the, quote, insurrection at the U.S. Capitol, end of quote. So, Bill, do you see any correlation between January 6 and this pathway toward socialism, upheaval, everything else that's been going on?
Yeah, it's important. You know, one of the advantages of studying history is you see patterns. It's sort of like you run algorithms on the metadata and you see these patterns that can become predictive. They collect all the information on you, but they're doing it to run these algorithms and see what you're going to be interested in buying next, right? So let's look at some history. In 1788, the king of Sweden is Gustav III, and he wanted to get into war with Russia. Back then, Sweden was a really big and powerful country, but the Swedish parliament would not approve Gustav's war. And so Gustav had the tailor of the Swedish orchestra sew Russian uniforms, and he had a detachment of Swedish soldiers put on the Russian uniforms, and they attacked a Swedish outpost dressed as Russians. And it swept across Sweden that the Russians had attacked, and the Congress panics, and approves the funding for the war.
Mm.
And then we look ahead in 1939. It's Operation Himmler. Hitler wants to invade Poland, but international public opinion would not support it. So Hitler, in the Gliwice incident, had Nazi soldiers dress up as Polish soldiers and attack a German village. And the news media picked it up. The Polish had attacked, and so Hitler responded by invading Poland and taking it over, even though he was behind the whole thing. Stalin did a similar thing. There was an anti-Stalinist movement growing in 1934. So these were people that did not like Stalin. And it gathered more and more momentum. And Stalin had a friend named Sergei Kirov. And Sergei Kirov was giving speeches praising Stalin. And what happened was that Stalin decided he would murder his friend Sergei Kirov and blame it on the anti-Stalinists. And the situation was that everybody believed that the anti-Stalinists did it because they hated Stalin and they hated Sergei Kirov. Well, Stalin used this as an excuse to round up and prosecute and kill over a million people. So it's this idea that he orchestrated the break-in or the attack and used the attack, blamed it on his enemy, and used it as an excuse to round up all of his political opponents and have them locked away and killed. And so you cannot help but see the similarities to January 6th.
Yeah, are you saying that's what happened on January 6th?
Well, there are videos, and Tucker Carlson even aired the video of a security camera in the Capitol pointing at a window. The window is broken. In come 16 men dressed in black from head to toe, black hoods, black masks, all kinds of riot-type gear, and they're smashing up the Capitol. Well, there are no people dressed at the Trump rally dressed in complete black. And did they have black clothes underneath of their clothes? In other words, did they go into a bathroom and change into complete black? All that we're saying is the narrative of the left is that this is a spontaneous reaction to Trump's speech.
Right.
And when you have evidence that it was not spontaneous, that this is planned, and then Tucker Carlson had somebody on that used to work for the FBI, and they talked about how they would go from just catching criminals to infiltrating the criminal group, egging the criminal group to doing a crime so they could catch them in the process. You know, the famous way that they captured the pagan motorcycle gang. They infiltrated the gang, and then they orchestrated a crime, and so they were all waiting there so they could catch him. And so this guy said that it looks like FBI people were involved in planning the Capitol break-in, and that there were some naive Trump people, and I talked to some of them. It was cold that day. There was no security at the Capitol like there normally is. The doors opened from the inside, and the policemen were waving people in. They thought they were being let in out of the cold. Some of them thought they were getting a tour of the Capitol, right? It was very, very strange that McConnell and Pelosi turned down Trump's offer for more security at the Capitol that day. A lot of strange things that don't add up. The one person that was killed that was a Trump supporter was shot by somebody in the government that they were wanting to hide his name. Why would they want to hide his name? You know, when the George Floyd thing happened, they didn't want to hide. It gave all the indication that the narrative that we're being told, that it was Trump people that rioted and did this, that narrative is falling apart. What is appearing is that there was some plans going on. And when you see these different things, I wanted to read this quote from Richard Pipes. He wrote a book called Communism: A History. In 1934, a prominent Bolshevik, Sergei Kirov, the party boss of Leningrad, was assassinated under mysterious conditions. Evidence points to Stalin. Kirov was gaining too much popularity in party ranks for Stalin's comfort. His assassination brought Stalin two advantages. It rid him of a potential rival and provided a rationale for instigating a vast campaign against alleged anti-Soviet conspirators. The purges of the 1930s were a terror campaign that, in indiscriminate ferocity and number of victims, had no parallel in world history. And now another is 1955. Constantinople turned into Istanbul. And there was still a remnant of Christians, Greek Orthodox Christians, in Istanbul. And the fundamentalist Muslims they wanted to take over the government, and they planned to blow up the home of Ataturk, who was a nice guy. He was the secular founding father of the Turkish Republic. And then they were going to blow up the home and blame it on these Greeks, and then use that as an excuse to stir up the population of Istanbul to attack these Greek neighborhoods. The home never blew up. The newspapers ran with the story anyway, and it whipped the city into this anti-Greek frenzy, and they storm into these Greek neighborhoods and destroy businesses and smash windows and destroy 80 ancient churches and bring the Orthodox priests out of the church and rip out their beards and all this stuff. And then, of course, after that, the Greek population diminished to almost nothing. And one of the people that was in Istanbul at this time was Ian Fleming. He was a reporter for the London Sunday Times. And you know him because he wrote the James Bond series of novels. But Ian Fleming said, hatred flowed in the streets like lava. So we have this orchestrated attack blamed on innocent people and then use it as an excuse to go and eliminate these innocent people. Another one was Japan, 1931. They had a little railroad on the coast of China. And supposedly the railroad had an explosion near Leo Thau or Mukden. And Japan used the explosion of this railroad as an excuse to invade China and kill hundreds of thousands in Nanking, China. And they had, you know, even in the newspapers in Japan, like sports scores, but it was this general kills this.
Hello, Bill.
In this, there was no railroad explosion. It was just what they call a false flag. And people say, what's a false flag? It goes back to the pirates. And the pirate ship would want to capture another ship. If they put up a pirate flag, the other ship would stay away. And so they put up a friendly country's flag, or they put up a distress flag. And this, you know, naive ship would think, oh, they need help, or they're friendly, or whatever. And then they would allow them to get close. And then once they got close, they recognized these are pirates. The good ship tries to get away, and they can't. So it sends one signal but it's actually another signal.
I tell you what, I need to open some lines here. Our phone number to Crosstalk, 800-733-9829, 800-733-9829. He's talking certainly about these false flags and issues that are going on and this projection and blaming others for the very things you're doing. Now, I find it also very interesting that just with the volumes of legislation that are being introduced to advance pure socialism, it's going on in our nation, folks, as we speak. I mean, John and Andy Schlafly have just recently written about the pending infrastructure legislation. They are calling it socialism on steroids. Now, Lord willing, tomorrow, Tom DeWeese is going to be joining us. We're going to be getting further into that aspect on this infrastructure legislation. But socialism on steroids is perhaps a very accurate description of that taking place. And, Bill, what you've given us here, as we even titled this program, Lessons from Cuba, the pathway that Cuba took, and we see where we are today, it's not accidental, the uprisings that are taking place, the division that is taking place, all the government doling out as much as they are and how they're doing it, and making it worthwhile for people not to work and to provide for every need while at the same time using scare tactics. This is all part of this goal of socialism, Bill, to bring us to that communist era.
Well, it is. And by the way, all this information is in the book, Socialism, the Real History from Plato to the Present. And the subtitle is How the Deep State Capitalizes on Crises to Consolidate Control.
So, friends, you can contact our switchboard. We're making this book available, donation of $18, vcyamerica.org, or by calling 800-729-9829. We've got Mike calling in from Phoenix, Arizona. Mike, you're on the air.
Yeah, the program began with a teaser about some women talking about how everyone was equal in Cuba. China, in my opinion, is trying to take over Chile for its food and lithium, I suspect. And the kids there, they've been having protests and all this thing that Bill's been talking about has been going on there. The kids have been talking about inequality. And my retort to them is, I tell them, well, you'll all be equal. You'll all be equally poor. So that's my ready answer for that.
Yeah, thank you. And Bill, he's not far away in his thinking there, is he?
No, that's exactly what Plato said. He says that the people are the abdomen of iron and bronze, very similar to George Orwell's Animal Farm. And right, they kill the farmer, and then all the animals are equal. But then the pigs say, well, some are more equal than others, and we're the brains of this operation. And so you have to work, and if there's any extra apples, we get them. And it's this usurping of power into a ruling class that it's a bait and switch. Imagine a child picks up a sharp knife, a toddler. You will tell that toddler anything to get them to put that sharp knife down. I'll take you to McDonald's. We'll get some candy. You know, once they put the knife down, all bets are off. Don't you ever pick that up, and right, they get spanked or disciplined or whatever. The America, they will promise us anything to give up our freedoms. Once we do, all bets are off. You know, it'll be like you mentioned, Chile, or it'll be like, you know, Hong Kong, where they go in there with a long list and arrest everybody.
We're going to take a quick break here, and we'll take the break and come back to more of your phone calls here on Crosstalk at 800-729-9829. William J. Federer, our guest today, Socialism, and yes, indeed, Lessons from Cuba. Back in a minute.
For the Worldview Report, I'm Brandon House. Our website is worldviewreport.com. Well, the Rockefeller Foundation, they're at it again. This is an organization that I've documented for years has been proponents of eugenics. And even according to numerous reports, we're working inside the Hitler regime with some of their camps. The Rockefeller Foundation is now going to work with the U.S. Surgeon General under the Biden regime to deal with what they believe is vaccine misinformation. Again, this is psychological projection, putting on to their enemies what they actually do. The misinformation about the vaccine starts with the word vaccine. This COVID-19 emergency order doesn't even meet the legal definition of a vaccine. And as of today, we have over 11,000 Americans dead, according to the government's own VAERS reporting system. Who's putting out the misinformation? The Surgeon General, the government, or people like me?
Again, Bill's book, Socialism, The Real History from Plato to the Present, How the Deep State Capitalizes on Crises that Consolidate Control, our way of saying thank you for your support of $18. Send you a copy of that book, and just call our switchboard, 800-729-9829 during regular business hours. Or you may go online right now at vcyamerica.org. Lines are busy here. We're going next to David in Superior, Wisconsin. David, you're on the air.
Thank you, Jim. Wonderful to talk to you, Mr. Federer, once again. I think that the left have, and you illustrated this, I believe, very clearly, have run out of ideas. We have our version of the brown shirts now acting on behalf of the Democratic Party. I don't feel ashamed to say that Joseph Robinette Biden was not a legally elected president, and I believe this will be reversed in some time. Americans must stay the course and not get violent. They're spoiling for our own version of brown shirts and the dark night of violence. They're trying to push us into responding violently, and that would be the biggest mistake we could make. We have to do this legally, and we have to do this through the judiciary, which is also seemingly quite lacking.
David, thank you for your observation. I'm going to have Bill comment on that.
Yeah, that's critical that we understand that. That a lot of times the CIA operations is they will support both sides. Right. So they'll be behind groups like, you know, the Proud Boys and white supremacist groups. They'll actually be CIA people in those as well as in the BLM side. Why? Because they want to spark the bloodshed. Once blood is shed, they will have an excuse to crack down on everybody. And many of the quotes of the founders point out how whatever noble motives there are when a war starts, it very seldom ends up with those. In other words, once it begins to be people being killed, then this is the time when they have all the military technology and drones and 5G tracking that, yes, we need to solve this legally, motivate people to push their state legislatures for election integrity. If we can block the leaks in the boat and just have honest elections, if we can get back to that, then we can begin to bail the boat and put in some good people and push back.
Let's go to Mike calling from Mount Pleasant. You're on the air, Mike.
Hi there. I was in the U.S. Navy 43 years ago. As a matter of fact, July of 78, I was in Cuba in Guantanamo Bay. Didn't let us off the base. I'd like to know a couple things. First of all, who has been controlling Cuba after Castro's death? That's the first question I got. Who's in charge right now?
Bill?
Yeah, well, my understanding has been his brother and then the cadre of insiders that had the power that don't want to give it up. And they've been subjected to pressure under Trump, but when this present administration has been showing weakness, that's when they get emboldened.
Okay, Mike, you got a further question?
Yeah. John Kennedy made the Russians back down and remove missiles from Cuba that were pointed at major American cities.
Mm-hmm.
I was like 5 or 6 years old when this happened. It was called the Cuban Missile Crisis. Are we doing, as a country, anything to prevent that right now from having Russia send missiles to Cuba right now as we speak? I mean, are we staying on top of this somehow? Or is it going to happen again?
No, we're not, and you know, China has missiles and subs. There was one a couple years ago where there was a missile that looked like it was fired from a Chinese sub right off the coast of California. And, you know, North Korea, nowadays, with Russia possibly having a, you know, jets that can go twice the speed of sound. As military technology advances, the window of time to respond gets shorter and shorter. And under Obama, we got behind the eight ball. And under Trump, we tried playing catch up. But they have been given a tremendous military advantage. And, you know, here we are introducing free transgendered surgeries in the military. We're raising up a new generation of kids where they'll spend half their life trying to decide what gender they are. Yet you see aerial footage, like drones, of what looks like a Chinese courtyard, and it looks like waves. And as the drone zooms in, it's like 10,000 Chinese soldiers doing their karate motions in unison.
Yeah.
And these people are serious about war, and we're like introducing where you don't even know what bathroom to use.
Right. Yeah. LGBT indoctrination, critical race theory, et cetera. Thank you. Gary is next. Mesa, Arizona. You're on the air, Gary.
Yeah, I got William Federer's book, Miraculous Milestones, and I tell you, it's pure gold. And as soon as I get $18 together, I'm going to get this next book and take it with me, because this is the only way to cut through this mire, this animus that is being produced by the left. Mm-hmm. So I want to thank you all for making that available. And
great.
And one of my questions was, do you think China will get involved in Cuba? I'm wondering.
China's involved with a lot. They've been building a deep water base in the Bahamas. They've basically taken over Panama. They go to these countries and...
Bill, they just took over a microchip factory, the largest microchip factory in England, called the loan on them and just took over this. I mean, their hands are in everything.
Yeah, they come to countries and they say, we'll build highways, but... you've got to let us get mining rights for all the, you know, rare earth minerals in countries in Africa. They've got to go. We have to remember China is the oldest continuous civilization in world history. It goes back 5,000 years. And Ming Dynasty, Qin Dynasty, you know, the all these different – and
you know, Bill, we're going to have to leave it there because we're less than 30 seconds left. And
anyway, socialism, the real history from Plato to the present, it's all in the book.
Great. And folks, available, vcyamerica.org, or by calling 800-729-9829. Sounds like, Bill, we need to do a program just on China alone.
Yes, definitely.
So much there. And Bill Federer, our guest. Bill, thank you for taking time out to join us today.
Thank you, Jim, and I encourage everyone to get that book.
Great. And, folks, this really is an eye-opener, and will help you to see that the things that are unfolding today are not by accident. Thanks for joining us here today on Crosstalk. Lord willing, Tom DeWeese with us tomorrow. We'll be getting more into that infrastructure legislation, too. Thanks for joining us on Crosstalk.
You've been listening to Crosstalk via satellite and the Internet from VCY America. Views expressed may or may not be those of this station. For a CD of today's program, send a donation of $6 or more to VCY Tape Ministry, 3434 West Kilbourne Avenue, Milwaukee, Wisconsin, 53208. Or download by RSS or podcast from crosstalkamerica.com. And join us again for Crosstalk.